This is Parsha, Parsha's Ki Tetze. It starts right away with the discussion of Nechama Oyevecha, when you go out to a war against your enemies. The Chofetz Chaim says, even though if you look inside, we know it's talking about Yishtifas Toar, there is certainly meant to be taken literally of an actual war. The Chofetz Chaim says over here, it's not referring to a real battle as far as two armies fighting, it's referring to the battle that we have with our Yetzer Hara. That's what Chofetz Chaim suggests. When we go out to battle, it doesn't mean, again, I'm not sure how you're going to make the rest of the pasuk. I'm not going to detail how the rest of the pasuk fits in with this explanation, but this is not a regular explanation of a typical battle. Chofetz Chaim says it's a battle that we have with our Yetzer Hara. As a matter of fact, it's called the Chobos HaLavavos, says not only is that the case, but the battle of Yetzer Hara is much more challenging than any typical battle. He gets the following mushel. There was a guy, imagine that a person, someone that you know, was in the army. We had a guest sit in the shir, was wearing his full gear, who was in the army. Imagine that he would come back from a battle. It was a long battle. He was in the trenches, nights, bullets whizzing by, there were casualties, people died. And imagine he goes back home and someone says to him, that was the easy battle. Now good luck in living your life the rest of this battle with the Yetzer Hara. That's really the hard battle. He'd laugh at you. You say, what are you talking about? I'm sleeping out for 2 days. I'm going to eat the best meal. I'm going to sleep in my bed again. There's no battle. That's the battle was being in the front lines. Bullets whizzing by me. My friend who never didn't make it through. That's a battle. That's not a battle. That's an easy battle. The battle that we struggle with, that's the hardest battle for us, is the battle that we have with the Yetzer Hara. That's what he suggests. Why is that a harder battle? There's two answers to that question. Noah. Answer number one is the answer that I'm going to quote to you by the Minchas Asher of Asher Weiss. I'm going to save my answer for the very end, what I think the harder battle is in that scenario. Rav Asher Weiss suggests, he explains, the reason why it's a harder battle is because there's never an end. Usually when the war ends, we all know it ended. Whoever was victorious, that person lost. And we go, oh bad, hopefully resuming our lives, either with more land or less land. When it comes to the Yetzer Hara, the battle's never finished. It's never over. From the day and this mission of Pergamos brings down, don't pat yourself on the back until the day that you die. Because Yochanan Kohen Gadol served as the Kohen Gadol for many years, and in the end he became, he rejected God in the end. You could be a big tzaddik for 90 years, and then in the end, 30 years of your life, until you're 120, you reject. Anything can happen. Don't pat yourself on the back for what you've accomplished already, because the battle's never finished. Even we know in our Chumash, one of our Avos wanted to finish the battle. He wanted to chill out. Anyone know who that was? One of our Avos asked to chill out. Not really, but the Torah suggests that he did. Yaakov. It says, Vayeshev Yaakov. Yeshev means this. Finished. Esav and Lavan. He's married. He's got 12 kids. I'm ready to retire. I'll go to Florida. I'll enjoy the country clubs a little bit. I'm ready to relax a little bit. To Hashem, relaxing? You can't relax in this world. And what does Hashem do right away? The story of Yosef. A tzaddik and a person in this world never relaxes. The Yetzer Hara battle is constant. And therefore, it's much more difficult because there's never a stopping to our battle. That's what the Minchas Asher says. He says one other thing also, which is very important, I want to share with you right now. The most important thing, if you want to have any chance at success against the Yetzer Hara, is ki teitzik. You have to go out and do battle. If you do not do battle against the Yetzer Hara, you have zero chance of succeeding. When I say succeed, I don't mean you're going to become a rabbi. I'm not referring to not wasting 1 second of your year here. I'm not referring to that. I'm referring to just succeeding more than you fail. I'm referring to getting better at what you do as a Jew than getting worse. That's what it means to get better, just to pass. Doesn't mean you're going to be 100, but it could be a 65, a D, which means you pass, because you're getting better more than you're failing. That requires ki teitzei, which means to go out and work on it. Now, I could sit and applaud all of you for a decision that you made to come here to Israel. I'm not going to. Because there's a certain amount of peer pressure involved in your decision. And that almost everyone, could be that this is far more different. But almost every single person that you know of that was not so off the derech, that parents did not have financial difficulties, they were not, almost everyone came to Israel. Success does not mean that you're able to stay in yeshiva and not kicked out. That's not success. If you remain in Tzar Tzaraga, from today until the day that you leave at the end of the year,
and you survived, you wear a shirt, I survived yeshiva. You did not get to that yeshiva, that's not successful year in yeshiva. That's what you mean. A successful year is when you can say like Bechama, you go out and you realize you're doing battle right now. I'm doing battle. I've been doing battle for many years of my life already. I've been failing a lot in the battle. But I'm going to work on it and do battle and get better. Then you have a chance to succeed it. I'm going to say some words right now that hopefully will help us do battle a little better. But I want to start off with a very bizarre, and I spoke about it actually with some of the guys on the Tiyul. I thought I'd like to speak Torah a little bit on the Tiyul. So I was sitting with Yoshua next to these women cooking up spaghetti, and all these, I don't know how they did it, but on the Tiyul they were cooking up spaghetti, and they had a great little fire pot thing. Anyways, whatever they had, we were sitting down a little bit, we were schmoozing about a topic called, in this part called Ben Sora or Umura. I'll explain to you a fascinating idea that's a little bizarre as well. The Gemara in Sanhedrin in the 8th Perek has a whole discussion. It's called actually Ben Sora Umura, that's the Perek's called that. Has a discussion, did it ever take place or not? It's a machlokas. One opinion says it did take place, actually. I know the person who died at the Ben Sora Umura. One says no, never took place. I'm not going into how that could be. Forget that right now. We'll talk about it later on. I'll lunch today. We'll talk about it over lunch. We'll talk about that. But what I will share with you is they asked the Kasher, the one who says that it did not happen. They ask a question: why did the Torah include it? And the answer given is very strange. It says the Gemara, Drush Umakabel Schar. The reason why the passage of Ben Sora Amora is in our Chumash is so people can learn it and get reward for learning. That's the answer the Gemara gives. Now, I hate to break it to you, but the odds are likely that even without that passage in the Torah, if you and I sat and learned forever, took regular sleep breaks, regular eating breaks, regular ball breaks, but learned, like, as our job, we would not finish everything that is there to be learned. We wouldn't finish it, probably. It's okay, don't worry about it, it's fine. You'll have to learn what you can, that's all you have to do. You don't have to finish everything. Best that you can is what you do. Why does Hashem have to make a pretend story up so I can learn more? I'm not going to finish if that's really relevant to me. I'm not going to finish. Kal v'chomer this. Good question. Fair question. Understand the question? Okay. It must be, I want to suggest to you, there are insights from this story that we can learn only from this story. There are things this story tells us that are so shocking, but we only could learn it from this story. Without it, we would have missed out on very important points in how God runs the world and how we are in the world. Now, I'll share with you 3 points that I take out from this story that each one in a vacuum is itself life-changing, kal v'chomer when you put it together. The first one. It says, part of the Ben Sora Amora rule is that the mother and father warn you. It says, v'lo shamalihem. They did not listen to the warnings of his parents. The Ben Sora Amora, just a little background, is a rebellious child who at the age of 13, for a few months of his life, he behaves in a strange way. He eats certain meats and drinks certain wines and steals from his parents even. And that boy, we say, the rule is that boy, if the parents turn him in, we take him out and we kill him. We stone him. That's the rule. Why it never happened, I'm not going to get to right now. Why it may never happen, I'm not going to get to right now. But I will tell you that part of it is that they warned him. They said, don't do this. Below Shemali, I mean, didn't listen to them. Point number one, I want to show with you for this year, it's crucial. I asked you the very first day of yeshiva, fill out for me a form. Tell me your most exciting things to learn and the least exciting things for you to learn. And every year, I'm not picking anyone, I don't remember even who wrote it, but every year I get one answer. At least one person writes, my least important thing to learn is Musr. Every single year, at least one person writes that to me. This year is no exception to that. What's the word about Musr? What are we worried about? What's the concern we have? What's the challenge? You're afraid someone's going to try to change you around? What would happen? Imagine you're in business school. Go to Columbia Business School, and you write a paper on how to invest stocks in a certain difficult climate of the market, and you had a whole paper up, and sure enough, your professor rips you apart, takes your paper, he writes red all over it, and he gives you a C-, and he explains to you what he thinks you made a mistake about in your paper. Would you look at him and be like, excuse me, how dare you say that to me? Who do you think you are, ripping me up like that when I'm trying my hardest to do? What we would do is probably go over to the guy, we give him a big shake and say, wow, especially this time we live right now, you taught me a lot. I appreciate your help and your advice. I appreciate that. That's what we'd probably say. Probably. And yet when it comes to someone giving musr, someone goes to give the musr shmooze to you. Do you know me? Do you even know who I am to tell me this?
Chutzpah. How dare you? Come, sit, sit. Chutzpah. If a person is lo shama lehem, if a person will not listen to what's being said, then we have very little hope of them succeeding at all in their religious pursuits. If you can't hear out a Musa Shmuz, if you can't want someone to tell you something to make you better, like you'd be happy with your financial advisor to do so, if you can't do that for a Rebbe, or for a friend, or for a Shana Bet student, or for someone you just met even maybe, then what hope is there of us changing? And therefore, the first step that we learn out from the Ben Sora Mora story is that you have to take people's tips they give you. They don't know you so well, you're right, they don't know you so well yet. But maybe they've seen people like you before, they don't know you, but they're giving you a tip. Maybe they're wrong, maybe they're not wrong. Don't be so quick to turn them down. That's number one thing I want to share with you about this piece in this parsha. Number two. This over here is a little bit scary. I'm warning you in advance, it's a little bit scary. The reason why we kill the Ben Sora Amora is because Hashem is telling you without question marks that that person will one day kill somebody else. Without question marks. That boy who's rebelling now by only having stolen from his parents and drinking a certain amount of wine and a certain amount of meat will one day kill another person. I mentioned again the movie Minority Report, where you have a sci-fi concept of predicting punishment, you know, a crime before it's occurred. We have that does exist. I mean, it's sci-fi, it's not real. It exists, but it's not real. We believe this. Hashem is telling this to you as a fact, not as a possibility, as a fact. He's telling to you that this person will one day kill someone. How is that possible? There's not one person who would ever not kill someone. That's ridiculous. Because he stole a little bit of money, and he drank wine, and he ate meat. He's going to kill someone no matter what. That's ridiculous. But the Torah is telling you that's exactly what's going to happen. That's exactly right. What you see from here very clearly is that the actions that you do when you are younger will forever change who you will be when you're older. Forever. Forever. When you behave and do things right now today, you can't say, oh, these are my younger years, I'll grow out of it later in life. You will definitely grow out of it. This is who you are, this becomes your makeup. Everything that you do will be forever who you are. From today, from already years ago, and for the future, you don't have an action that doesn't affect you in some way at all. The Torah is telling you, I promise he's telling you, I promise if you do these actions, you will one day kill somebody. I promise. It's inevitable. I'm so far from it. All I did was I stole. I didn't kill. It doesn't matter. It's impossible. You're not going to kill also. Because what you do today, the behaviors that you have, will forever affect you. Don't think, ah, it's the first week of yeshiva. Let me go and enjoy myself and run around and be a little wilder. Because this will be, I'll get into it later on. You could say that. That's impossible. It will work later on. But you have forever affected yourself by not having done from day one what you're supposed to be doing. If you experience things in your life that you shouldn't be experiencing, you think you're in Israel now, your parents aren't around right now, you do anything you want to do right now? It's the opposite. Everything you do right now will forever affect your year, ultimately speaking, your life. That's what the Ben Sora Amora. There's no action that we have that you can say, ah, it's not a big deal, who cares? None of that affects you at all. Not only that, but I'll share with you one last point about this point. We say in the beginning of Sefer Devar, Parsha Devar, we say at the very beginning, Moshe Rabbeinu is listing a number of places that Kali Yisrael went to. One place they went to is a place called Di Zahav. It refers to Egel Zahav. Di Zahav means die is Zahav. It says the Gemara Bracha that Lana Beis. Moshe says to Hashem, Hashem, you know why we did Egel Zahav? It's your fault, not my fault. It's your fault. You gave them so much money. What did you expect was going to happen? We blame Hashem, and Hashem seems to accept the Taina that he was the reason we did Egel Zahav because he gave us too much money. That's what we accept. A sefer I saw named called Das Torah has a fascinating shot there. It quotes the story of the Gemara Brachos Aflamet Beis of a melech that gives his son a nice back, dressed up in beautiful clothing, makes him smell very nice, and puts around his neck a piece shell dinari zav, money. And he has him walk next to a brothel, which is the Beis Zonos. Has him walk next to a brothel. The Gemara there says, of course he's going to sin there. It's not his fault. You put a kid with money, looking very nice, smelling good, next to Yitzhar, it's not his fault. Of course he's going to sin there. Hashem does not hold you responsible at that point. It's too late already. The person who was guilty was the one who let that scenario arise in the first place. I'll give you a muscle that's more modern day, more appropriate. The guy's an alcoholic, and he goes to a party with alcohol. He is 100% certain he will drink alcohol. And it's not even his fault.
The fault was that he went to the party. That's where he was at fault. He could have avoided the situation arising, and he didn't. And therefore, he's to be held accountable for going to the party, not for drinking at the party, but for going to the party. You have to realize that in life, in general, there are things that we know we're bad at, that we know we fail sometimes with. Your job is to make a decision before it arises, so you can avoid it from ever coming up. Because if we get in a situation like there, it will forever affect us. Forever. We have no hope at ever avoiding it from not affecting. It will always, the Ben Sura Mora is telling us, will lead to things, will lead to things, will lead to things. And you want to avoid that. That's what you're trying to avoid. That's part two.
If I can end off quickly.
The last part I want to share with you is the part that's very, very prevalent, doubtful to you sitting for granted. Everyone else in the room making a lot of noise. That is as follows. It says you have to listen to Kol Aviv and Kol Imo. If your parents weren't consistent with you, if they didn't give you the same rebuke and the same chizuk and the same help, then when you go off the derech, it's not your fault, you have Ben Sura Mora. It requires you to have heard Kol Aviv v'Kol Imo, one unified front, one consistent front. This is a very, very crucial thing for you, and I'll explain to you why that is.
When it comes to a rule in the yeshiva, I'll give an example.
The yeshiva has certain rules, okay? I'm sure you know the right, but I'll show you anyways, just now, because I know it's not here when these things are something about violence. There's certain rules that you shouldn't go to certain places in town. Certain rules that you shouldn't be using certain extracurricular activities, shouldn't be involved in drinking or in smoking. The rules the yeshiva has. I'm sure your parents had much of the same rules. My guess is they probably did. Often what happens is when someone goes away from their parents, they think, oh, now is the time for me to experiment, to enjoy. I did it when I was younger. I got some parents' will. Now I'll do it without parents around at all. I'm going to tell you those things. You know your parents give you those rules? You know why? Because they care about you. Because they want you to be successful. Because they want you to achieve greatness. And they give you restrictions that will help you become better. You know why the yeshiva gives you rules? Why you should go to certain places? Because you walk in a certain place, you feel disgusting. Last year, my wife and I went on a date. The crack square. We walked through it. To see guys, and also to see what it's like, see what my guys are fighting for. I felt disgusting walking by. I felt disgusting. I needed a shower when I left. People who were your age, vomiting on the side, or acting like complete fools. Why in the world would you subject yourselves for your 1 year of potential growth? Why are you giving yourself mixed messages? If you want to succeed, call up people, call it more, then you have only to listen to a consistent message of growth this year. Still enjoy your friends. Just go to cafe every moment. You should go to places and enjoy your time. If you can find a place to watch the game, that's appropriate. Go watch the game. I don't care about it. But why are you giving yourself mixed messages by watching your friends vomit on the side of the street or smoking whenever they're smoking? During the year initial, we're here to grow for that reason alone. Don't tell me, oh, the first month is not different. But I already told you, every single thing you do, you will remember. To this day, I remember movie shows that I saw when I was before you were even born. I still remember them. Russian God gave me a good memory, and he gave you one also, and you'll also remember them. And you remember the first week in yeshiva? You'll remember Beit Hazman, remember everything you'll remember. If you hold the standard, a year of success, an entire year, where you're not just succeeding walking back to the airplane after years of not getting out of yeshiva, where you're looking for a year of growth, then from day one, the day that you leave, you're constantly working to do the right thing. Yeshiva gave you rules to help you with that. They don't want to be bad guys. And I'll end with this last part which I started with. My shot, what I think the reason why the Yetzer is harder than a war. Because usually when you have a war, you know who you're fighting against. I'm wearing a certain uniform, they're wearing other uniforms. I'm at a certain place, I'm trying to capture that place where they are. Come to Yetzer Hara, you don't even know who you're fighting at the time. You think this is okay to do. There's nothing wrong with doing that. That's what you think. The Yetzer Hara is licking his chops, you would say. He's licking his chops. Because he got you. You actually believe that I'm not doing that. Now you do it, and now you're caught in the web. You messed up. I'm only going here, I'm not doing that. That's what he wants you to say. You're listening to the wrong person, you're doing the wrong thing right now. You don't even realize that you're listening to the wrong teammates. And I'll end right now with the story I told you at the beginning of our shmooze today, before the shmooze started, but with our sikhas listen. With our sikhas listen that we started at the very beginning. My child, I told you all, you made fun of me in the middle seder, my Depa Prophet family has. My child was needed teeth pulled 3 months ago. And he looked me in the eye and he said to me with tears in his eye, "Dad, please do not let me go there. Take me home." He was crying to me. "Take me home. Do not leave me pulled." Then he says to me in the other ear, "I need you to sit in the chair and hold him down while I pull his teeth." That was my heart. I wanted nothing more than to take my kid in my arms and run him home and give him a nice chocolate and a candy and tell him how much I love him. And instead, I grabbed him from behind, I sat down in the chair, and the dentist yanked two of his teeth out. You know how much it hurt me? You know how much I would love to have let him go home when he wanted to do? I would love to. But that would have been bad for him later on. So I didn't. Am I a better parent for it? Probably. Does he love me less? Probably. Might. But I have no choice. What am I going to do? You, same thing with us. You don't even know what we're fighting. You don't even know who you're supposed to be fighting against sometimes. And I'm telling you right now, I promise you one thing, that do not fight against your vein. Do not fight against the yeshiva. Listen to the call of Yiv, the call of Imo. Listen to your family. Listen to your yeshiva. Be open to suggestions. Be open to the rechiz. Be open to the musr. If you do that, I promise you do that. Will not be a year when you walk back on the plane and have you feel like I survived while you did like that. Won't be that year. When you look back on it, you say, "Wow, I'm so fortunate that I spent the year that I did, full of growth, full of experiences, mostly positive ones hopefully, but a year where I felt myself be raised to new heights where I can appreciate now how far fetched the Bezer of our possibilities is for anyone who has a heart open towards the soul."